Hare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivaradhari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Tira Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Gopijana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Janarandana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari Natira. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama, Rama. Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Bhagavati Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavati Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavati Vasudevaya. Thank you. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jaya mudirayet nasta prayeshva dreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavatina istiki. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 12, verse 34, correct? First, I want to say thank you for having me over. I don't come very often here. This is kind of my romping grounds in Krishna consciousness, you can say. I was here in 1982 when there were six people living in New Ramanreti, and there used to be oxen and just a double wide trailer. One side was the temple room and one side was the kitchen. And I may have told this story before, but Srila Prabhupada's Murti was in the trailer with the Didis. It's only Gaur Nitai. And the Prabhupada was on the right, the Didis were on the left. And one night I had a dream, because in order to go to the kitchen, it was very difficult to access the trailer from the other side. There were really high steps. So everybody will go to the kitchen through the temple room. So as I, in my dream, was going through the temple room to the kitchen, and everybody went to the temple and just kind of perfunctorily put their head on the ground for a second and just walk away, like, you know, because you were going to the kitchen. And I did that, and I felt like the right side of my body was on fire in my dream, and I just couldn't believe how intense it was. Then I looked to my right, and then it was Srila Prabhupada, not the Murti, but Srila Prabhupada himself, sitting on the Vyasasan, staring at me, glaring at me. And I knew what, he didn't have to say anything. I knew what he was thinking. Like, he thought I wasn't here. Oh, that's not very nice of you. So I woke up. I thought I was having a heart attack, really. My heart was pumping so hard, going out of my body. So from that moment on, I never went to a temple, particularly this temple, I guess, but I never went to a temple and saw a Murti Prabhupada the same way. I think the message was clear. Prabhupada and his form are none different. The Murti is Srila Prabhupada, just like the Didi is Krishna himself. All right, let's get on with the class. Do you do the whole thing? Sanskrit and word by word? Yeah. Kadachit dhyayata shrastura. Kadachit dhyayata shrastura. Veda asams chaturmukat. Veda asams chaturmukat. Katam srakshya katam srakshyamyahan lokam. Katam srakshyamyaham lokan. Samavetam yatapura. Kadachit dhyayata srashtur. Veda asams chaturmukat. Katam srakshyamyaham lokan. Samavetam yatapura. Katachidyayata sastra. Samyaham lokam. Shakshyamyaham lokam. Samavetaya tapura. Tachidyadata shastu. Vila asam chatur muka. Tanchyamya loka. Samavetaya tapura. Chidyata shastu. Veda asam chaturmukha. Samavetanyatapura. Anyone else? Male or female? Anyone? Kadachit. Once upon a time, dhyayata, while contemplating, srashtu, of Brahma, Veda, the Vedic literature, asan, became manifested, chatumukat, from the four mouths, katam shakshyami. How shall I create? Aham, myself. Lokan, all these worlds. Samavetan, assemble. Yata, as they were. Pura, in the past. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Once upon a time, when Brahma was thinking of how to create the worlds, as in the past millennium, the four Vedas, which contain all varieties of knowledge, became manifested from his four mouths. Please repeat. Once upon a time, when Brahma was thinking of how to create the worlds, as in the past millennium, the four Vedas, which contain all varieties of knowledge, became manifested from his four mouths. Purport. As a fire can consume anything and everything without being contaminated, so by the grace of the Lord, the fire of Brahma's greatness consumed his desire for a sinful act of sex with his daughter. I always get these kind of verses. The Vedas are the source of knowledge, and they were first revealed to Brahma by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, while Brahma was thinking of recreating the material world. Brahma is powerful by dint of his devotional service unto the Lord, and the Lord is always ready to forgive his devotee if by chance he falls down from a noble path of devotional service. The Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.42 confirms this as follows. Swapara mulam bhajata priyasya tetvanya bhavasya hari paresha vikarma yat chupatitam katanchit dunoti sarvam ridhi sanivishta. Any person who is engaged 100% in a transcendental loving service of the Lord at his lotus feet is very dear to the personality of Godhead, Hari, and the Lord being situated in the heart of a devotee excuses all kinds of sins committed by chance. It was never expected that a great personality like Brahma would ever think of sex indulgence with his daughter. The example shown by Brahma only suggests that the power of material nature is so strong that it can act upon everyone, even Brahma. Brahma was saved by the mercy of the Lord with a little punishment, but by the grace of the Lord, he did not lose his prestige as the great Brahma. Verse again, once upon a time when Brahma was thinking of how to create the worlds as in the past millennium, the four Vedas, which contain all varieties of knowledge, became manifested from his four mouths. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksuru Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langate Girim Yat Kripata Maham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Maharavam Shri Chaitanya Mishwaram Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayva Cha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnava Vyo Namo Namaha. So this is, even though the purport is speaking about something that is not in the verse, because the verse commences with the word kadachit, which means once upon a time. So it's describing, however, the chapter, the entire chapter 12, begins by describing Brahma's slip-up. And there is not only one Brahma. Brahma is a post, and the four-headed Brahma is just one of many. So when he had this slip-up, he didn't commit a sinful act in a physical sense. He just had a bad thought. And I don't know where exactly says this, but it says that in Kali Yuga, thoughts are forgiven. That is not the same thing as, you know, if you think something that is improper, you get punished. The karma is once it goes into action. So even Lord Brahma, it's hard to conceive, because Lord Brahma's body is made out of intelligence. It's not like one of ours. And he had a bad thought and immediately realized his mistake, and he gave up that body. So that Brahma was gone. And this is what is called the little punishment. A little punishment, he had to give up his body and take another body. So in our case, it's a different story. We may try to use this caveat, that this clause, that thoughts are not, they don't count. We can get away with murder. We can present ourselves in front of the deities, in front of Prabhupada, in front of the devotees, and have all kinds of sinful thoughts, and just get away with it, because they're not karma-bound. But this is not a good policy to begin with. Meditation is a very important part of Krishna consciousness. In other words, we need to become more thoughtful, more introspective. We need to actually put some emphasis on just the rituals, not just the external aspect of Krishna consciousness, but the internal, how we cultivate our bhakti, Bhakti Lata Bij. Again, this Bhakti Creeper is very, very tender. Even we've been in the movement for so long that we can't even remember details about coming to Krishna consciousness. Still, this is no excuse to have an area of our Krishna consciousness that is neglected, such as meditation. Not because of the prestige that one may acquire as becoming a senior devotee. This is not sufficient to maintain one. And sometimes we see that devotees tend to, for no apparent reason, they've been practicing Krishna consciousness for a long time, and then all of a sudden, where is he? Where is she? Where did they go? And many times it's because they neglected this important aspect of Krishna consciousness, which is to cultivate one's thoughts and to try to mold them according to our practices of bhakti. So Krishna consciousness is not just a religion. It's not just a process. It's not just an external. Bhakti yoga is not a mechanical endeavor. It never is. It never will be. It actually depends on our volition, depends on our desire. Because desire is something that we carry with us life after life. This is what actually carries us from one body to the next, even to the spiritual body, our desire. So our desire will be molded according to our mentality, and that would shape our consciousness. So we say, at the time of death, we should be chanting Hare Krishna. Yeah, that is, excuse me, this is true. But it's not just at the moment of death that we are all of a sudden, this is it. This is the validation of our career as devotees, that at the moment of death, chanting Hare Krishna. Because actually our life, our lifestyle and our thoughts will actually decide what do we do at the time of death. So it's not just at the moment of death, just yell into someone's ear, Krishna! And that's it, they're saved. This is none different from one of these upadharmas where you sign up and you become a member of something and they say you're saved, you're done. You don't have to do anything. So we should be very careful to cultivate our inner thoughts. And the purpose is to please Krishna. It's for our own good. It's for our own good. We have plans. We all have plans. We all have different ideas of how to practice Krishna consciousness, how to spread Krishna consciousness. And Krishna has plans too, for us. And because Krishna is smarter, his plans are better. And because he's kind, his plans are for our benefit. So it's not like Krishna has an ego problem and needs to be worshipped by everybody. He has such a big ego that unless people don't worship Krishna, he feels neglected and depressed. Krishna doesn't have any problems like that. He is always, please excuse me, eager to reciprocate for our own benefit. There is one particular verse of the Dhammadharastakam, since we just went through the Kartik, month of Kartik, that always puzzle me and touch me. And Krishna says, according to Satyavrata Muni, who wrote the prayer, I'm conquered and overwhelmed by pure loving devotion. This is unbelievable. This is unbelievable that Krishna is actually touched by our endeavor. Krishna is Atmarama. He's Swarat. He's fully independent. He doesn't need anybody. He doesn't have this emptiness that we feel in our lives. He's never dissatisfied. Never dissatisfied. Yet, he hankers for the relationship with the jivas. Go figure. I had a question for many, many years in Krishna consciousness. I didn't have really questions, because I was pretty convinced by the philosophy. From the moment I heard, you're not the body, I said, that's it, I'm sold out. I don't need to know everything else. I know this is good, and the rest must be just as good. But I did have one question, which was, why would Krishna expand as the jivas, having the privilege of and the power to expand as Vishnu tattvas? Vishnu tattvas are a lot more fun. They're not fallible. They're not stupid, ever. Vishnu tattvas, Shakti tattvas, why not expand as more like Radharani instead of expanding as poor little us? This question was actually never answered to my satisfaction. Until one day I was reading a book by Dr. Obiel Kapoor. Dr. Obiel Kapoor was a godbrother of Srila Prabhupada. I can't remember his spiritual name, but he wrote a bunch of books. And I was reading this book called The Saints of Raj. And The Saints of Raj is a book written in a very archaic English, you know, typical of the 19th century. And so it's a little tough to read. And it's telling stories about Babaji's and other inhabitants of Vraj that I never heard of. You know, such and such Das and such Babaji, and they live 100 years ago or 150 years ago or 50 years ago, and they were in a cave and they had darshan. And I mean, the stories were fascinating, hardly believable, but fascinating. I didn't actually care about the veracity of this book. I was very inspired by hearing about the lives of these saints. And in the beginning, in the preface, he quotes from the, was it Tattva Sandarbha? One of the Sandarbhas, Priti Sandarbha, from Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami actually answered the question that I had. He said, Krishna is like a flute player. I mean, he is a flute player, but he uses an analogy. He's like a flute player. So the sound that comes out of a flutist is not a very pleasant sound. It's just a I do play a flute, so I know it just kind of blow. Say, you have to pronounce the letter T when you blow. So this is a sound that comes out of the flute. But when it goes through the holes, it produces a beautiful sound. So the jivas are the holes in the flute. And the combination of the flutist blowing through the holes produces this beautiful sound. So the exchange of Krishna's love for the living entities and the living entities' openness to accept it and reciprocate, this produces a relationship which is not found with the Vishnu tattvas. So that was the answer to this question. So we were talking about Brahma and talking about Krishna. Brahma is subject to some bewilderment, like everybody else, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, that there is basically material nature is so strong that even the creator himself has a hard time adjusting to the changes. And we can read the story of Markandeya Rishi in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, where Markandeya Rishi asked the wrong question, because Krishna wanted to give him a blessing, and he said, I would like to know how Maya works. Yeah. So if you get a blessing, please do not ask this question. This is a bad question to ask. So Krishna smiled very enigmatically, and with that smirk, all of a sudden, Markandeya Rishi, I don't want to spoil it for you, so please read the story on the 12th canto. He was tossed around like a rag doll into the ocean of devastation. You know, it was a mess. It was a mess. And eventually ended up in a hermitage where he was, and Krishna was sucking his toe on a banyan leaf, and, you know, what? Kind of like this. So it's an amazing story. So here we can see that even the most advanced, like Markandeya Rishi, Brahma, they don't have the privilege of being aloof or immune to Maya. The power of Maya is such. And Maya is not an evil force like some of the Catholics or Christians have, that, you know, the image of the devil, that they're actually two forces, that they're equally strong fighting each other. Krishna is Asamorva. There is no one equal or superior to him. So there is no such thing. Except that Maya is a devotee, a pure devotee, empowered devotee, which has the very thankless task of becoming a personal trainer to all the living entities in this world. So she goes to make sure that everybody does their exercises and gets stronger. So we say, okay, Maya attacked me, so now I'm free. No, we can't say that, because the purpose of building muscle is that actually you can lift more weight. So expect company when you pass a particular test, because another test is on its way and it's probably a little stronger than the previous one. So we say this is Kunta, this is a world full of anxiety. This is what we find anxiety. And we were discussing that with a friend devotee out in Gita Nagari, that my realization was that there is the material world, which is Kunta, it's full of anxiety. And then there is Vaikunta, which is the world without anxiety. But in Vaikunta, there is one particular planet, Goloka Vrindavan, where there is anxiety. There is lots of anxiety in Krishna's planet. Everybody's in anxiety there. Because Yasoda prepares a huge feast for Krishna to take out on picnic, but she's thinking he's going to be starving. It's terrible. I didn't cook enough. I didn't cook the right things. Krishna may not like this. And the gopis are thinking he's going to step on little rocks and it's going to damage his soft feet. And everybody is actually thinking of something that is anxiety related. So there is only Vaikunta, the planets below Goloka Vrindavan, up to the Vaitarani River. There is no anxiety. Everybody's doing the right thing. Everybody's happy, and, you know. But in Goloka and in this world, there is lots of anxiety. Of course, the anxiety in Goloka is permeated with ecstasy, because everything is a stimulus for ecstatic love of Krishna. Whereas in the material world, anxiety is simply taking us away from the real goal. So here's the message, that the things that we do, we should not concentrate on the mistakes. We should actually try to learn a particular lesson that is given to us by Krishna through Maya many times, and try to surpass that. Next time we're going to pass. Next time is going to be better. So this things like low self-esteem and depression and all the things that are derived of failing to accomplish a particular task, they should actually be impetus. No, I'm going to do better. I'm going to try better. And it begins by cultivating one's thoughts. That one should be, of course, we may have eventually developed PDS. I don't know if they use that expression anymore, pure devotee syndrome. That at least in the 80s, it was a very popular expression. Yeah, this devotee has PDS. He thinks he's much higher than what he really is. So let's not develop PDS. Let's actually develop real Krishna consciousness. Let's assume our situation. We are all in the same bus. And we may not go back to Godhead in a flower airplane or a swan. We may go on a bumper car or a used Toyota, some type of locomotion. But the point is to make it to the door. And it is possible. It is possible. I was giving a class in Tribogna in northern Italy, and there was this person who's been associating with devotees since he met Prabhupada. That's how long he's been associating. But he doesn't have it together somehow or other. He can't get his kitchen clean, and he can't get his he can't offer his food. He has deities, but he can't. He doesn't even know the names. It's just kind of a messy life. And I told him that. He said, "Well, how can I break this cycle? How can I break this cycle that I actually get through and chant regularly? Read. I have the Bhagavatam, but I haven't read it." I said, "Well, because he was thinking, oh, I can just think of Krishna and think of Krishna's pastimes and so on, and then, everything will be fine." But I told him there are 9 cantos before you get to that point. So you have to go work through the process. And he asked me, how can I do that? Is there a way to break this cycle that is dragging me down? There is. I said strong association, regular service, and chanting. Chanting. And chanting needs to be modified. As we join the movement, however long ago we have joined, we started chanting. This was until it became a vow. And we took a vow to chant. But we took a numeric vow. Because as far as I know, still, when someone takes diksha, they promise to chant a minimum of 16 rounds a day. But we don't ever hear an initiation with someone, I promise to chant pure attentive rounds. So it is 16. So it's a numeric vow. So we take a vow to chant 16 rounds minimum. But now we have to get into the nitty-gritty, which is that this won't maintain our Krishna consciousness, just a numeric vow. We have to try to get deeper into the chanting and listen to it. And our mind is spoiled. Burijan Prabhu, a great devotee, he was saying that sometimes he goes months without hearing a name. How can we do this to ourselves? We are chanting, or we are chanting while we are doing something else. Just putting some order in the kitchen and putting the pants away and chanting, or texting and chanting, or many other new features of inattentive chanting that they have developed since the internet has come about. So we have to actually pay attention. So this is a time of renewal. It's not that we have to, and even when we cannot maintain this standard, even the numeric standard, it drops. It's inevitable that eventually someone who is not chanting with taste or with attention would actually lose interest or become busy. Maya will distract the person and take him to another task that seems equally as important. But chanting is something not to be neglected and needs to be cultivated. It needs to be tended to regularly, just like Tulsi Devi. If you have a Tulsi, you make sure it doesn't have mites, has enough water, has enough sunshine, it's not too cold, it's not too hot. So we are cultivating Tulsi with a lot of rules. So there are rules to cultivate the chanting, not just that one accomplishes a task. And I'm sorry if it sounds preachy, because I'm just talking to myself here, trying to convince myself to improve my chanting. So we have to actually pay attention. pay attention to our rounds, that they're not be neglected. Like how many times we finish our rounds, and then if you think about it, if you think back, you know, how many names did I hear this time? Am I chanting with love and devotion? Am I chanting with attachment? Am I attached to the holy name? Is it my only treasure? Do I consider the holy name my only treasure? If you have to take something out of your home, if your home is burning, would you just take your japa? Or would you go for something else? So this is actually step two in Krishna consciousness. We have to look back and look inside and see if we are doing the things correctly. Because otherwise, the mind will actually play tricks on us, and Maya is a lot stronger than we are, and we won't have a chance. We won't have a chance. It's like Maya is can destroy the entire material world. So why is that we think we have a chance fighting Maya? We don't. We have to surrender to Krishna. That's the easy and the only solution. So in this case, Brahma, he had some problems. Krishna is very forgiving. Krishna just restore him to his original position with no lack of prestige. It's a very painful thing, someone who has a position of honor to go through ignominy and disdain, contempt. So Krishna didn't want Lord Brahma to suffer like that, so he just restored him, didn't make him lose anything. So there is hope for us. There is hope for us. And we should use it. We should use our trump card. Sorry to use the word. We have to use actually our advantage, which is that we are very fortunate, very fortunate. Bhagyavan, that's the word for fortunate. That actually out of many, many lifetimes, we actually had some intersection with practicing Vaishnavas, and we are actually being introduced and invited to be practicing Vaishnavas ourselves. So let's use this good fortune to practice real Krishna consciousness, again, which is not an external process. Bhakti has nothing to do with the way we look, we talk. It has to do with what we do internally. So that's it. That's all I have for today. If there are any questions or comments, we welcome them.
Thank you for your class. I'm trying to pay attention to my chanting. What's best way to use my attention is like the sound of the mantra, or am I thinking of Krishna's pastime or form, or what's best way to be attentive?
I believe the thinking of the pastimes of Krishna is a natural process, will occur naturally. We don't have to force ourselves to do that. We just have to, and there are techniques. I heard Chachinandan Swami say that if you chant the first word of a Maha Mantra, Hare, with attention, the rest will follow. Hare Krishna, then you can hear the rest. And that really works. And we can practice catching ourselves. You know, we chant for a while and our mind is, you know, slipping away. And Krishna says in the Gita that wherever the mind goes, you know, just bring it back under control of the self. So that's another technique that you can use. Don't give so much leeway to the mind to go away. I was cultivating a person, a doctor, and I told him about chanting. He wanted to know the process of meditation, etc. So I gave him some beads and I taught him how to chant. And I said, you know, you have to hear the names. So next time I talked to him, he said, I'm chanting 45 minutes every morning. I said, that's great. How many rounds do you get done? Maybe one and a half. I said, well, what's wrong? He said, no, I'm trying to listen. So, you know, if my mind goes away, I start over. So, yeah, we think it's funny, but if we had to actually chant attentive rounds, our 16 rounds will take probably 16 hours, or maybe more. So he was doing the right thing, but I told him, yeah, okay, well, just maybe you should just try to be attentive, but, you know, chant more. So how to become more attentive? Make it a priority. Like in household life, you know, there are many householders that because they have kids, because they have jobs, because they have things that concern them, that, you know, they're not part of brahmachari life. Brahmachari life is like being an amusement park, you know. You're just some in your own world doing, you know, playing around. It's full of austerities and everybody tells you what to do, and there's a lot of detractions apparently, but it's a very happy time. It should be a happy time. And householders sometimes neglect the rounds. You know, this is probably one of the first things to go, is the 16 rounds. Oh yeah, or, you know, I chant them tomorrow, and then tomorrow becomes next week, next year. So there are techniques for them too, like chant 4 rounds when you get up, chant 4 rounds before you go to bed, and chant 4 rounds before each meal. In other words, do not eat unless you finish your 4 rounds. So there is at least there are some rounds there. As far as how to chant more attentively, more purely, you have to beg. Part of the process is vandanam, offering prayers. So you should go in front of the deities, if you have a chance, or Krishna in front of them, you know, in a picture, in the mind, and pray, please, help me chant. My rounds are horrible. I'm making no tangible spiritual advancement. You have to step in. I can't do it by myself. So it's good to have something to pray for. And as far as our rounds, I think we will have always something to pray for. So it's up to you what you do with it. And then because of the influence of Kali Yuga and because of Maya, you will forget about these things and you will, you know, just go up and down. Just like if you read Madhurya Kadambini by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. There is like a set of, I think it's in chapter 5, not so sure. There's like things that happen daily to practicing sadhakas, that you go up and down. You know, there's a lot of things that you think, oh, I'm alone here. This only happens to me, that, you know, I have problems and I think I'm better than what I am, and, you know, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur lists them all. It's like a manual of problems. And don't feel that you're alone. You're just struggling like everybody else. Like when you go to school and you're learning the alphabet, you know, and you're just trying to draw the letters and you get them confused, you know, the D and the P and the B and the, you know, all that stuff. All the kids around you are suffering from the same problem. You know, some get over faster, some get over slower. So all sadhakas have struggles of their own. So it's good not to feel alone in this endeavor, that you're the only one, that you're being neglected. So get strong association. Ask those who you can see that they have taste, you know, how do you do it? How do you do it? Even non-devotees have good advice for us. We were once invited to this huge mansion in California. That they're not devotees. They follow Neem Karoli Baba. You know, they have very simple philosophy, almost no philosophy. Like, love everybody, serve everybody, love God, something like that, you know, like three steps. And they don't tell you how, they don't tell you what God is like, you know, kind of impersonalist, I guess. And we went to their huge mansion. I mean, it's like a really $25 million place with a pool, cabana, organic orchard, and, you know, many rooms, huge mansion. And there was a room in the bottom floor which was had cots, beds, dedicated for people who just wanted to stay, even if they didn't know them, you know. They just wanted to stay. They had bathrooms and, you know, they had food prepared by a Indian, South Indian Brahmin. So when I talked to this guy, he was younger than me, I said, I don't know how you do it. I've been hosting programs in Krishna consciousness for years, and I wouldn't just let anybody stay in my home and, you know, and feed them every day. You know, I don't know who they are. I don't know what their intentions. They don't practice the same process as I do. Why? So I can't even conceive of what you're doing. How do you do it? He said, honestly, I don't like the person that I become when I don't do this. So that was, here you go, a non-devotee giving very good advice. Very good advice. So when we chant, we should think, yeah, I got away with 16 inattentive rounds, or 15 and a half of them. Do you like the person you are when you do that? So you should learn. No. So I should change that. I should change that in my life. I found that a technique that sometimes it works with me. I chant maybe 14 rounds, you know, the way I chant with sporadic attention. And then for the last one or two rounds, I really try to concentrate. I slow down. I don't care how long it takes. So if I can do that, then I can spread it backwards. I can stop at 13, I can stop at 12, and then dedicate the last four. In other words, you know, try to bring all the rounds under a particular standard that is satisfactory. Not just to me, it's to Krishna. This is actually the deal that we have. We need to reciprocate. Krishna is always reciprocating with us. He's taking care of every psychic, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional need that we have, and we should try to take care of Krishna's need, which is that we go back to him. He misses us. This is inconceivable, but it's true. Krishna misses us. Of course, it'd be better if we show up in good shape. So that's why we need to shape up before we get there. Anyway, that was a very lengthy explanation you probably didn't want to hear, but that's what you get. Prabhu.
Hari Bol, Prabhu. Thank you for a nice class. What advice you can give us to keep focus on the goal? You know, like we find like a lot of us sometimes as we go through life, we lose focus, you know, on the fundamentals in Krishna consciousness, and we get sidetracked by this and the other economics, this, that, you know. But how can we able to maintain that focus?
I used to, not so much anymore, but I used to play table tennis semi-professionally, and the other players will say, you have such a concentration that you don't get distracted. I think it's a little bit of detachment that helps, that you don't care. You know, ultimately, it's a game, so I don't care if I'm losing or I'm winning. I just care if I'm playing well. I have to give my all. So I think Krishna consciousness is more or less the same thing. The result is up to Krishna. Is you should concentrate on, am I doing things right? Even if I don't focus completely at what I'm doing, am I doing it correctly? Could I improve it? Even if it is a little bit. Just, and again, the goal is to please Krishna. And Krishna is self-satisfied. So how do you please Krishna, really? The only thing that Krishna doesn't have, although he's self-satisfied and unlimitedly powerful, is our love. This is it. That's the deal. That's all you have, and that's all he doesn't have. So you have to concentrate on how can I love Krishna back. So that should bring you in focus a little bit. Like, okay, I didn't do this, I didn't do that, I'm distracted by this, family affairs, business, what is the three B's, business, babies, and bills, right? So let's not that take our consciousness away. Let's concentrate on how can we get better. And don't be discouraged. Don't be discouraged, because Krishna will never abandon you. It's not like a friend or a spouse or a child that if you say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing, then you have to wait 6 months, you know, or years later they're still reminding you, oh, you did this to me or you said that. Krishna is ever forgiving. He doesn't take it seriously. Doesn't take it seriously. The only thing he takes seriously is your endeavor to love him. He takes that very seriously, and that's the only thing that counts. You know, when you look at a police profile of yourself, you find all the bad things you did, right? When you look at Krishna's profile of you, it's only the good things you did. So we should concentrate on giving Krishna what he wants. Yeah, I can't be more specific. I don't know what your...
I really like the encouragement. And my question is going to revert back to fall down. Again, in the verses it says, twice anyway, by chance, right? So what is this by chance? What is...
By chance, I believe it's not intentionally, meaning that because of circumstances, like Maya will set you up in any situation, and you can take the bite or not take the bite. So if you're not very strong, you will take the bite. So that can be considered by chance, as because our senses are unbridled, uncontrolled, because of bad habits, because of neglect, because of trauma, because of so many things, because of circumstances, because of social pressure, because of the way we were brought up, so many influences our decision, so many things influence our decisions. So by chance could mean a lot of things. But I would say by chance should mean once. Like this happened to you once. If it is someone who is a repeated offender, that is not by chance. That because if you have a problem, then you should ask for help and try to fix it. So if something happened more than once, maybe it could happen twice even, but by chance, I don't think it means like this is a habit. It shouldn't happen again. Yeah. So I think Lord Brahma, yeah, he had a slip up. He had bad thoughts, and even though he didn't act on it, he completely understood, okay, I'm done with this body. This body is useless. I can't maintain something like this. And If you want to read the rest of the chapter, it mentions that, Prabhupada mentions in a purport that one should give up one's body when bad things happen like that. That is, you know, there's a little extreme, but if you want to know the, you know, step one, hope you may have to take plan B in that case, but it's bad. So that's my understanding. By chance means it happens circumstantially because of many things, but it shouldn't happen again. Yeah. Anything else, devotees? Thank you for your indulgence, and happy to be here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.